Hi, everybody, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. This is Terry Patton, the creator and host of this series. And for anybody who doesn't already know me, I'm also the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice and the co-author with Ken Wilber of Integral Life Practice. I created this series to serve the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating a deep public dialogue about how higher consciousness can play a real role in helping human beings to rise to meet our current challenges so that we can make as benign as possible a transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet. I've now conducted over 100 remarkable conversations on this topic with many of today's leading thought leaders and spiritual teachers. And once you've registered at beyondawakeningseries.com, they're all available for free download. Today, I'm joined by Patricia Albert. We're going to continue that discussion in a conversation entitled Collective Awakening, What Makes It Possible and Why Is It Important? The way this will work is I'll introduce Patricia and we'll dialogue for about an hour, and then I'll make some announcements and we'll spend about half an hour taking your questions. So we'll finish up in about 90 minutes. Patricia Albert is the founder and director of the Evolutionary Collective in New York and San Francisco. When she was 19, she was hired by Werner Erhard and grew quickly into big, more and more important roles with major responsibilities at EST and then later the Landmark Forum. By age 33, she had already spent thousands of hours conducting transformational trainings that touched the lives of thousands of people. She then embarked on two periods of deep study with Bhagwan Rajneesh and A.H. Almas, and in the process, she met an extraordinary young German man named Peter who became her partner for 4 years. A relationship of tremendous intensity and aliveness opened up in a way that forever changed her, opening up new experiential pathways and radical insights into the potentials for the intercommunion of two souls in a mutual awakening. 7 years ago, she found a way to share that paradigm with others through her current work, the Evolutionary Collective Intensives. In them, a committed group works inside a highly focused container that provides a rich environment for this shared consciousness to reveal its potentials. She also hosts a weekly radio program, Evolutionary Collective Conversations. She lives in Sausalito in New York City and is currently completing a book called Mutual Awakening, Unleashing the Transformative Power of Relating. It's expected to be released in 2016. What I especially appreciate about Patricia is her ability to transmit a powerful vision of a new culture of mutual awakening and to consciously structure it. She's embodied it in very specific teachings. She's identified 8 activating principles of evolutionary relationship and 7 vectors that define a particular location in consciousness. And the Evolutionary Collective has been going on for 7 years, refining its form. It involves a long-term commitment that includes in-person weekends, weekly or biweekly virtual, dyadic, and small group practices. And they all knit together into a unique, single, immersive experience. So she's cutting new ground. Thich Nhat Hanh famously suggested that the next Buddha will be a Sangha. I agree. And I consider the work of growing that new higher we space to be one of the most important cutting edges in our current cultural experiment. Although I haven't brought it into this series, it's been a focus of my work for some years. I've led Mutual Awakening with many of the leaders in the field, including Thomas Hubel, Craig Hamilton, Samuel Bonder, Diane Hamilton, and Jeff Salzman, and Tom Steininger. I've also studied it with Robert McNaughton, Decker Kanov, Olin Gunnlaugsson, Dustin DiPerna, and Patricia. And I've written several papers about it, including a history of integral we space, going back to David Bohm, Francisco Varela, and Otto Scharmer. It's a dynamic and even explosive field of innovation, and I think it has the potential to transform human culture. But truly transformative spiritual work is not easy, otherwise we'd already be enlightened. So individual awakening is a profound matter, and so is mutual awakening. We're all suggestible. We can go into delicious altered states just by deepening into eye contact. So it's easy to delude ourselves. So I'm excited to be able to have a deep and real public conversation about this that really helps us locate what exactly makes mutual awakening possible. So welcome, Patricia. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Terry. I'm really happy to be with you and to have a public conversation together since we've had many private conversations.
And just a moment.
Sure.
Now, there we are. I have to close my windows. I want to invite you right here at the beginning to say anything that you feel would be useful at the outset that can introduce yourself to people you don't aren't familiar with your work beyond what I said in my introduction. Is there anything you want to share?
Well, I think just sort of the end point is for me, after 40-something years of teaching and working, you know, very intensely in you know, personal awakening and transformational development, you know, I feel like this piece, you know, this the opening that, for me happened about really about 10 years ago, even a few years before I started this, it feels like the culmination of really why I'm here and why I had the various experiences I've had and the kind of timing on the planet. So it's exceptionally exciting to feel like I'm, you know, sort of at the point of with the world and with my own work, you know, that they match up and there's something really exciting happening.
Yeah, great. Well, let's start by really putting forward what we're talking about with mutual awakening. Do you have a definition or a way to say what it is that we can begin with?
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, individual awakening, you know, the work, especially in the last 40 years, but obviously the last 3,000 in a certain way. You know, we've been focused on our individual development and, you know, the richness of people discovering their subjective world, you know, that their history makes a difference and their somatic sensitivity to oneself and, you know, just all of the work that we've been doing in the last 40 years is extraordinary and has really taken people very far. The mutual awakening or inner subjective awakening is that instead of that you have your reality and I have mine and I have my own subjective experience and you have yours, you know, that we're developing, that there actually is a way to be awake together inside of reality and to go beyond our own subjectivenesses and to go beyond object relations, you know, certain filters that the ego provides. And to find yourself, you know, that's what happened with the mystic that I fell in love with for a number of years. It was like we were inside the same world together, you know, looking around and feeling certain things. And, you know, we still had our individual sense of ourselves, but we were awake inside of reality together. And it was absolutely different. And so I feel like the mutual awakening or this inner subjective awakening is this new subjective world, you know, just like when Freud pointed to psychology and, you know, nobody really knew about that. It feels nascent. It feels like it's the beginning of that for the consciousness of humanity.
Well, I'd like to add a little something to that.
Yeah,
too,
please.
Which is, it feels to me as though we're also in a moment of really daunting crisis. I know an awful lot of people who lost their homes in the fire last weekend, and that's due to, in part, you know, to a drought that has a relationship to global warming, and there are thousands of refugees right now leaving Syria due to war, but that war broke out in part because of droughts that had a relationship to global warming. The potentials for there to be a lot more disruption and suffering are really upon us already. And the crisis on the planet seems to me is going to be asking us more and more to be engaged for our inner work to express itself in outer work. And our ability to make decisions, get along, hear each other, be genuinely receptive, be influenced by each other, influence each other, but to do that in a more coherent and in a way where there's a kind of trust and connection in our way of being together is the way that that awakening will demonstrate itself in life. And it seems to me that it may be really critical to our next years. So I'm wanting to see a culture of mutual awakening emerge that can actually be a social and even ultimately a political force in the world.
Well, I feel like with all things, you know, there's the right situation. You know, the planet is situated with 7 billion people, also that, you know, something's got to give. You know, we definitely need to move beyond our individuated bubble of consciousness and even self-development and self-concern. And I know, you know, I'm from New York, and, you know, I even though I live mostly in California at this point, you know, I consider it my homeland. And when 9/11 happened, I think, you know, for the people on the planet that were paying attention, and for sure the people in New York City, for a few days, we popped into something that was a bit different. And even though it required a disaster to wake us up, you know, it was like a life-threatening illness all of a sudden, and you wake up momentarily. It felt like we were inside something together. There was a kind of qualitative consciousness of being human that it felt like, oh, you know, this is normal. Like, this is the way it's supposed to be. You know, this is the way we're supposed to be together. And then it went away. You know, in New York, they didn't even honk horns for 3 days. So, you know, to me, that every once in a while we kind of pop out into something together that feels more natural. And I agree. I mean, my intent, you know, my piece of it, you know, everybody's doing their own part of the work, is to help facilitate, you know, those pathways so that we can start to live inside of a collective awakened consciousness that includes our individuality, but we're swimming in a kind of connectedness that starts to feel normal.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that connectedness is really a profound matter. It seems to me that some of the We Space work is really about just having deeper connections, becoming more authentic, and having a richer quality of depth in our mutual relationships. But your focus, you know, you're talking about awakening. And I've had a number of people, particularly people who have a long history of serious spiritual practice, question the idea that we can have mutual awakening if we haven't already awakened individually. And some people define awakening in pretty demanding terms. What do you say when you're confronted with that question?
Well, what I say is, I think part of what is also a very, you know, barely paid attention to possibility is, you know, in the axial age, you know, the last 3,000 to 5,000 years, awakening has had a certain trajectory. You know, there's ascent and descent, and, you know, a certain kind of enlightenment is considered awakening. And I just recently read, I really appreciate it. As you know, I studied with A.H. Almas, who I bow down to him. He's just a brilliant, extraordinary human being. And he wrote a book called Runaway Realization. And he's in there, he's talking about, like, there's ascent, descent. There's a certain kind of dimension of awakening that mostly is what people will be talking about in dual and non-dual and the rest of it. And then he's pointing to something else. And he's saying, like, there's another domain that is just, that's like, it's like different from all that. And, you know, I'm, you know, as, you know, we know each other, you know, I tend to be someone who, I have experiences and I have instincts and I follow them and things happen to me. And then I sort of find out what happened later. You know, I discover what the distinctions are, you know, that help to make sense of the experiences and the openings. And I instinctively felt like, as this, you know, the Evolutionary Collective and the way that we were working, that there was something that was different than, you know, like, I'm going to become individually awakened, you're going to become individually awakened, then maybe we're going to relate to each other. That there was something else, and I had experienced something with Peter where, you know, two not enlightened people, you know, came together with a certain embrace and a certain way of turning towards each other and being, you know, really intimate with this sort of evolutionary impulse. You know, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I think that's what we would call it now. And we were awakening inside of something together. And it included everything. And I believe that if I was existence, I wouldn't get stuck in one way of having anything happen, you know? And basically almost was saying that, you know, existence is way more mysterious, and so is awakening. It's way more complex and sort of opening up into endless possibilities. And so I'm more of that school of thought. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that is exciting to me is that we see people experimenting with so many different ways of entering into new and alive we spaces. There's this process called circling that Guy Sengstack and Decker Kunov and Robert McNaughton and now others are bringing forward. And it's really more at the social level of just dropping into the being very, very precise moment to moment about, you know, what am I feeling? What are you feeling? How is that, you know, and really getting a feeling for how we're affecting others and arriving. But it's more focused at the level of intimacy and there's they sometimes talk about it as an intersubjective meditation. But the idea that there's necessarily an awakening or a social purpose is less explicit in the way that's expressed. And then there are experiments like Andrew Cohen's experiments with his students of awakening as the evolutionary impulse, which very much has a very strong purpose. Or David Bohm's original work on dialogue had to do with undoing the kind of consciousness that was creating the world crisis, which he saw coming way back in the 60s and 70s. And I'm interested in how you locate your work in that continuum and how you relate to the whole continuum. You know, like there's so many different purposes of this.
Yeah.
You know, like does it have a social purpose? Is it an experiment? Is it just for the fun? I mean, it can be all a lot more than one thing. But you know, how would you place your work?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, I utterly, you know, see that the distinctness and the uniqueness of everyone, you know, everyone is like doing different pieces, and I think that's very much a part of the awakening. That, you know, that part of what is awakening culturally is, you know, with our uniqueness, it doesn't have to be one religion, you know, that finally, you know, wins over the world, but you know, that there's different expressions, you know, that are bringing in what is needed. And so for me, this piece, like it started off, you know, more with wanting to work post-personally. You know, I had done, you know, tens of thousands of hours of working with groups on people's individual process, and it just felt like it was done, you know, for me, not for the rest of the world, but there was something about there's got to be another way to move forward. And so I started there and then brought, you know, the consciousness that I had awakened into with Peter into it and have been discovering a lot of other things. So the context for the work is really to create with, you know, as highly committed people as possible, which is part of the process of commitment and surrender into a deep, deep, dedicated dive together. It'd be like being in a really mystical communion partnership. So, but it's with 100 people, 200 people, you know, it's with a larger group so that we can really go into the deepest kind of consciousness that can come through around this inner subjective awakening. And, you know, for me, I know, like, it's definitely, you know, I call it also we mysticism. You know, it has a mystical bent. It's not, you know, about the five steps to something or, You know, it has more to do with a kind of surrender and opening and discovering something directly through your own experience together. But I feel like if I can do the part of guiding and creating the right container and the right impetus for the people, and they stay turned towards each other in the way that will allow this to happen, the rest of it, you know, I'm utterly helpless around. You know, I mean, I know that, you know, what descends, arises, whatever you want to call it, you know, comes through is what existence wants to bring through at this point. And it's, you know, intense and beautiful and is transformative to the people that are in it. You know, the more you stay in that, in the intensity, and you find a way to stay, you know, aligned with that, it does transfigure you. I mean, my consciousness is utterly different than it was before. So I feel like I'm doing like this concentrated piece and with, you know, people that I deeply respect, you know, like you, I mean, teachers and thought leaders and, you know, and all kinds of people, but, you know, people who kind of want to experiment on that edge of intensity, but it's a particular kind of mystical intensity. And I trust that the translations, you know, that you're able to make, or, you know, a head of a hospital is able to make, or we have a woman who's a Catholic nun, you know, the translation she's making in with nuns in the Catholic world and teaching, you know, I trust that her consciousness will make those translations. So I feel, you know, like I'm reaching out to the world through the consciousness of the people and the quality of leadership in the people that are already there.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how many flavors of possibility there are when we deepen into mutual contact. And it occurs to me that something that might be really powerful and valuable for us to do here in real time, in front of everybody, is to engage in a short, in actual engagement of one of your practices, which I think is very beautiful, your mutual awakening practice. Do you feel good about just doing that right here, right now?
For how long?
Well, maybe we do 3 or 4 minutes each or something. Would you?
Sure.
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yeah, let me create a context for it. First.
Great. Yeah, exactly. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, like all practices, it'd be like, you know, if people didn't know what meditation was and you say, well, just watch us. You know, we're just going to close our eyes and be quiet. You know, it may not say the whole thing.
Yeah.
So the mutual awakening practice arose from me trying to bring people into the consciousness that I was sharing with Peter for 4 years before he died. And we were always, you know, because he was a real mystic. I was a learning mystic. And he was always really hyper-focused on the moment and on what was happening between us. And so I'm pretty good at being surrendered, so I surrendered into that. And, you know, we were tracking, you know, with each other, and kind of we only wanted to be in the intimacy of what was real. So even if something felt unpleasant or weird, you know, we were just as fascinated with that as we were with the blissful states and the ecstatic states that we went into. And somehow being that way was this wild invitation to existence to just, like, you know, like we were being moved. You know, it was a runaway kind of realization so quickly and so powerfully. It was like what would happen in a day was just hard to even believe. So anyway, I was trying to, you know, this practice is basically trying to bring people into the right way of focusing so that it invites that potential of this other force really to begin to unfold what happens between. And so you know, we'll do a simple question to each other, and we'll do the we part too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I think that's important, don't you?
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we could even just probably even just do that, right?
Yeah, maybe that's the best.
We could just go into that, so I can just explain the first part. Is
okay.
So where it is, so this consciousness is. What you do is you're paying attention where your attention is focused is rather than where many of us have learned is we've learned how to go inside of ourselves and to have some sort of very sensitive somatic, you know, quality of what we're feeling and what our body sensations are, what kind of subtle affects we're feeling in our heart or, you know, what are we thinking. It includes that, but basically you and I, if we were to do the first part of the practice, which is 10 minutes of me asking you the question, what are you experiencing right now, where your focus would be is on a little bit forward. You're like leaning forward into what is just emerging, you know, what is just almost liminally present in your experience and just touching it with the least amount of concepts, you know, with the most amount of just the sense of reality of what's there, and you don't have to make sense, and you don't even have to be Terry. You know, I mean, you can just answer whatever comes through without even a strong sense of identity. And then what I'm doing for that whole time is I'm letting my consciousness locate itself at the origination point of yours. So wherever you're beginning to experience from, my intention is to locate myself there. So I'm not inside myself, I'm inside of you, which does something. You know, there's a whole practice that is, you know, to try to get yourself outside of your own perspective and your own listening. So we do that 10 minutes of you speaking and me being over there where you are, and then you switch and ask me, and then you're with me and I speak. And then the last 10 minutes of the practice is what we'll do a couple of minutes of, which is what are we experiencing? And the we is speaking from the we, not what do I think we are experiencing, but what, you know, speaking as the we that you and I already are. And I, you know, and I can feel you, you know, we've sort of already been in that space as we've been talking. So do you want to do it?
Yeah. So Patricia, what are we experiencing right now?
It's sort of a little bit of a crystal kind of light focus. A little bit of a quality of like glass or something that's has some form or shape, but it's a little bit sparkly.
Mm. We're experiencing a kind of deepening into the center of the place of contact between us that is sort of emerging from the thoughts about the attention of others and the ways that this might be perceived by others, so that we're just leaning right into the place where our awareness is connecting.
Yeah, we're experiencing, there's a sound of our voices, you know, there's some like interplay that's almost like something's touching, and there's a sense of compatibility and interesting, it's like skin touching.
We're experiencing the paradoxes of depth at distance, of really, really being close, even though we're each in our own rooms in different places, and being very, very deeply into the place of our connection with each other, even though others are present, and how letting it all go into that next now, that leading edge of what's emerging, and I can feel progressive relaxation going on through my whole body as we do this.
And we're experiencing like the we feels kind of happy and there's even a quality of innocence and you know, like somebody who's sort of looking out from the corner of their eye at something. I have no idea why. Yeah, there's some kind of pleasure that I'm not sure what it's associated with.
Yeah, we're experiencing a coincidence of something playful and alive and fun and yet also a kind of profound empathy with, you know, with the pain of others. We're not immune in this space of play. It coincides with, it's got that bittersweetness to it too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And realness, you know, of there's a weight to it, but it's funny, it's a sense of like what I was saying about 9/11. You know, it feels like natural and almost ordinary, but real and close and open.
Mm.
It's like open, like ripples going out of who knows what will happen next.
Yeah. We're experiencing a little bit of I don't know what it is. Sort of, I think we're a little bit laughing at ourselves for the exhibitionism of going in front of others too.
Yeah, it's like trying to explain what kissing's like or something.
And I think we're also experiencing a little bit. I mean, yeah, like a sense of how to be really free, how to really be in the, you know, like we are being in the spontaneous play of it, and yet there's this seriousness, like this is in service of something greater, and simply, I don't know, trivializing it isn't it either, you know. So we're, something about play and seriousness too.
No, it feels calm, kind of thoughtful, quiet.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Patricia. That was beautiful. I really enjoyed doing that, and I think that helps show something about the particular quality of what can go on in this kind of mutual practice. Is there anything you want to observe about what we just did as we transition to another part of our...
It was interesting. We were already in that space, in a way, you know, because you and I have practiced together, and it felt like even from the beginning of the call, we were already sort of inside something together, even in the way we were talking. So that's what I noticed.
Mm.
For me, it felt like a continuum rather than we kind of dropped into something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be different, I think, you know, with someone who was more, you know, you and I are pretty fluid there, you know, so if this, you know, we're kind of like in that space, but also if someone else is willing, you know, there's a certain natural level of influence and fluidity that starts to happen. So, and that's part of the promise. I mean, you know, it isn't just to be in some kind of groovy space with someone. It's that the quality of consciousness, you know, as you may have talked about in one of your earlier programs, that Dr. Robert Keegan, you know, the Harvard professor who's a developmental psychologist, you know, when he talks about moving from the self-authoring level of consciousness, which is, you know, really where our individuation gets developed and needs to be, you know, kind of hard won, even individual spiritual development, individual development in our work and in relationship to our families and lovers and stuff, that we can be who we are and we know who that is. Then to move into this sort of interpenetrating, what he calls self-transforming mind or fifth order consciousness, is your attention moves. You know, you don't, I don't like not know what my experience is, but it's more with you. It's with the whole conversation. It's in the room that I'm in. You know, it's kind of interpenetrating everything. And then I just focus on the thing that seems to arise as needed. And I think that's really different.
Yeah. You know, it's a really poignant matter, it seems to me, to enter into these collective states and then to explore their possibilities. I mean, there's something almost intoxicating, because we are in this culture so you know, people are lonely. I mean, there is a deep craving for profound mutuality, for intimate contact, to really have just for someone to rest their attention fully with you for a sustained period of time. It's like water in the desert. You know, this is one of the reasons that these practices are exploding in their popularity so quickly, is that they're really speaking to a huge cultural need that we have right now. And yet there's a downside to the fact that we take to it so much like fish to water, in that just the fact that we're making contact with each other can, like, we can simply be satisfied with that. Oh God, this feels good. I'm not alone. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, we can go into collective states that are a little bit self-indulgent, or just, you know, like there's a hierarchy of, you know, are we just kind of consoling each other and making each other feel good? Is there a little bit of a potential for a group ego?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that's really going to be love in action? Love in action that extends beyond the good feeling we can achieve in a mutual awakening practice like we just demonstrated, or even what we can do in a small group. Does that activate us so that we become love in action in a way that extends, you know, beyond our group? And I wonder, you know, have you, as I'm sure you've contemplated all these things, and I'm curious, what are the distinctions there that you would want to draw attention to?
It's interesting, as you were presenting that, I saw something, you know, just differently, you know, or a different way to sort of see what unfolds is, I mean, one of the things is the practices themselves. So there are lots of different practices that are cropping up and, like you said, giving people the opportunity to at least experiment and begin to create some skills and some ability to focus in this particular way. And they are, you know, most of them are pretty awesome, you know, as far as, you know, what it feels like, and, you know, what ensues. So, for me, obviously, the mutual awakening practice, and you know, I'm actually going to be doing a teacher's training starting next year. You know, clearly, you know, if you were even to work with 10-year-olds, you know, what I mean, you could probably get them to do some version of this that would open something up, and it would be useful in almost any context. You know, if you could get the people to do it. But for me, the work that I'm mostly focused on, and I'm committed to that because I think that'll still be useful in the long run, but the work of the concentrated, you know, the Evolutionary Collective, which is this concentrated group of people that's growing and has a very committed, you know, at least a year at a time, they have to show up in a particular way, is it puts it in a different cultural context, and it also presents the possibility of a different kind of path, which is serious, you know, as we all know, like in the beginning of things, you know, even as a mystic, you know, you're usually given extraordinary experiences which kind of hook you at the beginning, and then there are other phases in the journey where, you know, you have to sacrifice certain things and your personality gets kind of erased and, you know, you can't feel God and, you know, there's some pretty difficult things that happen on the journey to becoming a vehicle for really being empty and really being wholly able to be surrendered, you know, to what's possible. And with this, you know, Peter and I, it wasn't all bliss. You know, I mean, we were literally taken apart. Whatever the barriers were to love that you didn't even know were barriers, you know, different kinds of identifications and things were just, you know, we would be in bliss and then we'd be shattered. And it was intense. You know, I mean, it was the most intense process I have ever been through. With the Evolutionary Collective, when people hang in there, obviously there's the bliss and there's, you know, the beauty of it and all the rest of it. But eventually you start getting more erased and all of the different kinds of ways we separate ourselves arise. And they're just normal human ways of separation that need to be looked at and dealt with, you know, with humility. And when you get sort of highly developed people who, you know, are, you know, have a certain amount of power, they're even more trouble, you know, when their egos start getting reactivated. So it does have a serious, you know, there is at over time, I think, you know, it really does create a kind of selflessness and a kind of disappearance of certain kinds of identity that are just as, you know, they're similar to almost any spiritual path. So I think that's the part I'm the most like turned on about is that process and to actually create, like, you know, I have a strange way of saying it. You know, there's, you know, we've had individual mystics and saints and holy people that have, I'm sure, helped the world, you know, to not fall into disrepair sooner than now. But if there was a scale, you know, if we could create a scale saint, you know, if you could create, you know, like 100 people that were willing to continue to be authentic and to purify and to, you know, keep diving in, and that we were truly like the multiple beloveds. You know, there was a consciousness that we were actually holding in some way that was really of a higher vibration. That could be really helpful.
Hugely helpful.
Hugely, right? You know, I mean, at least existence would be happy. You know, if I was, you know, if I was the creator of existence, you know, I would be like, ooh, I want one of those. You know, that would be really exciting to have.
Well, it's even, I think, necessary.
People, but like 100 people or 200 people that were really united in a kind of, you know, purification. That could be very useful.
Well, Patricia, I personally feel like, you know, we look at people like Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi, you know, and how there was a change that, you know, an idea whose time has come, and it constellated around these individuals who were like saintly in certain respects, and these nonviolent movements were able to midwife major cultural transitions in those countries.
Yeah.
But the end of colonialism or the end of apartheid or the, you know, end of legalized racist, you know, laws in the United States, those are small changes compared to a transition to true sustainability, especially with the levels of crisis and complexity. It's going to take a group. It's going to take a Buddha that is a Sangha being saintly in a different way, if we're going to transition in that way. It seems to me that becoming an adequate citizen of such a new we, such a new, you know, saintliness as a group, is one of the highest aspirations we can have. But I don't think that's a very easy thing to do. I mean, that seems like a very high aspiration, and you know, it's got evolutionary significance, and so I feel very kind of small and humble, even though I devote my life to this, and in some respects you know, obviously, although I'm an imperfect being, you know, I've learned a lot in my decades of practice, and I'm very serious about it. But I feel small and humble before the size of that aspiration. That's a revolutionary transformation. And I'm wondering where you feel your edges are and your, you know, where is it that this is hard? What are the developmental transitions that are ahead of you and your students as you press into that possibility? Because it's not nothing.
No, I mean, you know, I think the really important things in our lives that move us are pretty choiceless. And I, like, choicelessly am, like, devoted to that. And I know how ridiculous, it's like a ridiculous thing to be devoted to. Because even just trying, as you know, being in the groups, like, just trying to get four people to organize themselves to be on a call at the same time, you know, there's a whole bunch of mishigas that happens, you know, much less anything more evolved than that. You know, and the way that the ego displays itself and its self-concern and its, you know, is just endless. I mean, it's really kind of endless. But however, you know, I feel like the attempt at making that possible and to keep going for that and to keep providing the avenues and the opportunities for people to keep dissolving and going deeper and not understanding why they're doing it and then doing it. And, you know, that somehow there's something worthy in that. Do you know what I mean? I have, you know, I don't think, and there's probably some great quote, but there's some quote about, you know, it isn't my job to be successful. You know, it's your job to just sort of do it, you know, to just do the best you can. And then existence decides, you know, whether or not, you know, the crops grow and you have the right weather. So I feel that the edge for me is constantly being driven by that commitment. And so the places where, you know, I'll get angry or I'll feel frustrated or, you know, feel misunderstood, you know, just the various things that, you know, I think anybody has if you're a visionary on any level. That reactivate, you know, the parts in me just that are human that get tired or, you know, have some reaction that, you know, feels like my father's saying whatever. You know, that's a lot of what, you know, what I have been challenged by and continue to be. And recently, you know, just to share a personal breakthrough was I still was believing to some degree in the power of the world, like, you know, in that you have to have certain things or, you know, I needed certain supports in certain ways. And I could feel how
you
much
mean
I
like money and practical help and things like
yeah,
that.
Certain
yeah.
kinds of help mostly. Mostly it was like those kinds of support and something let go. And I realized like there was something that shifted, and I realized that, like, I'm not working for any of that. Do you know what I mean? It's like wherever this is coming from, it's like I'm being sourced by somewhere else, and I really don't have to worry about it. And something just went away. And, you know, there's still, like, a million things that need to be happening and this, that, and the other thing, but I feel different. You know, and there's, like, more joy, and people have been really supportive, and it just, like, something fundamental that I think that had never let go in me completely, at least for now. You know, who knows if it comes back next week, but I feel very different, and it feels like in, like faith, you know, there's the true expression of faith. Like, I feel like I'm being sourced by something else, and I'm not worried about how the world is reacting or not reacting or showing up or not showing up. It feels very different.
You know, I love what you're saying. I feel something similar. And yet I feel like what's similar for me is that I feel like I'm being sourced by a larger intention and I'm used by a larger you know, that there's a wind blowing and I'm in service of that. There's a larger movement in the world. Sometimes I feel it as being very graceful and very much just the current of evolutionary, you know, something very beautiful. Sometimes it feels like it's got a lot of urgency and intensity, and I feel the suffering of people and everything around it. But I do feel like I'm in service of and being used by that, and that's what resonates. But, you know, I also feel, I take very seriously this aspiration to become more saint-like, more truly transparent, more like I'm really living as love. And so all the little things, all the little, just the irritable moments or the places of unconsciousness or subtle selfishness that I observe myself dramatizing matter, you know, more than ever before.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can feel how important it is for us all to become really different kinds of human beings, and I have to exemplify that, and it really matters. And so there's a way that process of life reflecting my limitations back in my face and me just brokenheartedly caring to be good, true, beautiful, loving, free, you know, awake, generous, caring, compassionate, you know, really being a source of love in this world, it just matters at a whole way more powerful level than it ever did to me before. And that feels really important, you know, like that's something I just want a presence to.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've you know, since I was young, I've been graced to be able to actually make a difference in some way in the lives of people. You know, I've never had, like, another job. So, you know, that's been pretty amazing. So I kind of known who I've worked for. I never knew I had the support. I thought you still needed the world's support on some level, or the world's agreement, or what they thought about you. And that's the thing that actually feels different, finally, which is kind of useful. The other thing I think, Terry, is like you and I have talked about, you know, that what we want is to live in a new world. You know, that you know, more than like being in love with the right person or having certain things occur for ourselves personally, it's like we want to live in the new world that we see as possible. And I think that the fact that this intersubjective awakening has sort of arisen, you know, right around this time is also an opportunity that rather than having to be the hero or the individual saint, you know, against, you know, kind of against the world, even though you're loving the world into new possibilities, that we actually have each other, you know, that if we're humble and we're willing to keep discovering all those things that you were talking about and to actually do it together, because there's still so much competition, there's so much separation, even as you know, in, you know, with spiritual teachers and, you know, the people that you think are going to be the best of the best. It's just, you know, we're so untransformed here that we really do need to take it on together. And I do feel inspired about that.
Yeah, I do too, and I take seriously those ways in which I have to be. Well, you know, the thing for me, and one of the things that's very cool, like when we were doing the mutual awakening practice, part of what was going on was that it's like you're hitting refresh every second, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're like coming back into the moment in a real way. And I think that awakening has to come into the moment in a real way. And there are ways in which the crisis on the planet, you know, it's going to press reset for us if we're not pressing, refresh for us to the degree that we don't. And there are all kinds of ways that we're, you know, particularly those of us who are living in relative comfort in a fairly peaceful society where, you know, there's relative wealth and privilege, you know, can really feel disconnected from the larger context of suffering. And so there's something about the size of the crisis on the planet, the complexity of it all, that leaves me in this, I don't know, it's like the more I see things clearly, the more optimistic, the more happy, the more committed, and the more brokenhearted, the more urgent, the more needing to self-transform, to not ever be resting on the comfortable laurels of the ease that I'm, you know, I can be in a bubble. And the fires that took place recently left many of my friends homeless. I knew a lot of people in the area that was affected, and so I must know 24 people who had lost everything they owned, with their homes burned to the ground, where they had maybe just minutes or even seconds to get out of the place that they were in. They had no chance to even grab their belongings, some of them. And there's even somebody that I knew distantly who's still missing, may have been burned. For this to arrive in my own life has really shaken me, and it's helped me to feel how much I have tended to live in a bubble. Even though I feel a lot and I care and I think about the Syrian refugees who are pouring into Europe right now, I mean, it's not like I'm a person who doesn't take all that into account. I have these conversations about how I can be in a bubble of privilege and be numbed to my, you know, ways of being complacent, but I'm letting myself be penetrated even more. And in that, one of the things that comes forward is the preciousness and beauty of each moment, and the grace principle. Like, there's a mutuality between you and me, and there's also a mutuality between you, me, and the guest, the one who welcomed us here, the one who's beating our hearts, the one who's enlivening all this. And I'm really brought into this moment-to-moment, delicate, fragile beauty of all that.
Yeah. It's interesting. One of the things that, you know, as we were talking about how this collective awakening can be, you know, helpful, you know, evolutionarily helpful for what's happening on the planet, is we've been working with, as a collective, you know, what is the nervous system of the larger, like, you know, if you wanted to call it a we being, you know, of this larger being of 100 people, or, you know, what's the nervous system? How do you clear the kind of relationships between, so that it flows back and forth really easily? There's transparency, there's openness. How do we allow ourselves to be orchestrated by, you know, what you were just speaking about, you know, so that, like the way the birds move, where they all just go, you know, and they fly together, it isn't like co-coordination, it's something else entirely. You know, how do we as humans, you know, be able to weave together, to connect on such a level that we can actually be orchestrated, you know, with that level of refinement and that level of power. It was interesting, one of the men who is in the Eldershine Collective in New York is the head of one of the hospitals, and on 9/11, he said when he went down to one of the, you know, emergency situations, it wasn't even a hospital, he walked in, and he's been in a lot of disaster areas. You know, he's Doctors Without Borders, and he says usually there's just chaos, and, you know, it's not necessarily everybody working together. You know, there's egos and there's all kinds of stuff that occurs. But he said when he walked into this situation, it was like they were one organism. The way that they flowed and moved, and the energy that he felt, was like something he had never experienced before and has never experienced since. And I feel like there's a potential and a possibility in, you know, in what we're pointing to and what we're speaking about, where if we can get some of these, you know, sort of like collective we beings, you know, like maybe there's 50 people or there's 30, you know, where you start to actually develop the grooves in consciousness where, you know, more of the time there's some kind of stable state where you could actually be orchestrated together. You know, we're actually able to have that happen. We're capable of it, and we've built the infrastructure to have that happen from within ourselves. That could also be very helpful on, you know, what is happening on the planet, and would make sense to me, you know, that that would be the next level of kind of organistic design. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally get. I mean, you're communicating an aspect of your vision there that I appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, we're far enough into the
relates to
our
what
time.
Your show is about. Yeah.
Let's go. Let's pick up on that. But
sure.
I want to make sure everybody knows how to find out more about your work. Her website is evolutionarycollective.com, and she's going to be offering orientation weekends in San Francisco and New York soon. You can find out more details by clicking the link in the email that announced this call, or there'll be one in another email that I'll be sending later this week with my blog post about this conversation. And I want you to know a little more about me and what I do. My work's dedicated to human transformation on all scales, focusing on both the inner and the outer work. And you can connect with me and get on my mailing list at terrypatton.com. I'm going to be speaking in Montreal at the Conscious Heart Conference this coming weekend. October 10th, I'll be offering a talk at the International Forum for the Evolution of Consciousness at the University Paris Descartes in Paris, France. The theme is Actualized Utopias. And then October 29th through November 2nd, I'll be teaching with Ken Wilber, Diane Hamilton, and Jeff Salzman at the Integral Living Room in Boulder, Colorado. You can find out more about these events by going to terrypatton.com and clicking events. Now let's take a look at questions. So if you've called in, press star 2 if you'd like to raise your hand. And if you're listening all online, you've probably seen that there's a window. You can type in questions. This is a great time for people to ask additional questions. Several people have already sent some in. So please go ahead and raise your hand by pressing star 2 if you've called in by phone. And let me see what we've got here in terms of questions. Well, people are bringing in these larger issues in the world, Patricia. A woman, I think it's I don't know if it's a woman or a man, Rhine in The Hague in the Netherlands, asks, your inquiry sounds beautiful, and as you said, it sounded fluid, but how do you move toward awakening when you're deeply lonely or a refugee in total despair, or when there is this friction between people?
Well, I think, you know, you have to sort of still honor Maslow's hierarchy. You know, if you're dealing with just basic survival, you know, mutual awakening is not something you need to be paying attention to. I mean, you need to deal with, you know, what's present and what's up front. You know, I think the mutual awakening element is there to push the edge of consciousness so that it moves everything forward. I mean, there's always going to be people that need to push the edge of something in order to make space to move everything forward. And I think that partly this way of working is to do that. It's not necessarily to deal with survival situations.
Mm.
Yeah. It might help the people that are helping the people. You know, I mean, you know, as far as them being more connected and being more fluid in the way that they're working together, for sure. But, you know, there's a lot of different things to pay attention to.
So you see this as kind of a potential at higher levels of development that depend upon a certain basic level of needs being met, and
totally.
Not something.
So your individuality needs to be developed. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. in Keegan's model, you know, I mean, you have to. Development is real. You know, I mean, you can't go from, you know, being a young child to getting your PhD in college. You know, there are things that must be developed in order to correctly develop the next level. And And, you know, this mutual awakening, I think, really is mostly for people that have a very strong sense of their autonomy and their individual development.
You know, this might be a good moment to bring in a question from Bruce in Oakland, who is kind of, it is good. I mean, it's kind of good to speak to the skeptic. He's wondering about a collective narcissism, a we narcissism. He says, the we space I hear and read about always seems like it's ignoring the exterior quadrants, the world and behavior and the systems. Can a we practice be developed that includes these exterior realities in the creation of that space as practitioners go into it?
Well, I think, again, you know, there's a difference between we practices and what we're trying to do in the Evolutionary Collective, which is a more comprehensive environment. So sometimes, to be honest, you know, I mean, having been around, you know, sometimes people do experiential things and it's more like spiritual entertainment. You know, there's a certain, like, cool factor. You know, I think that's fine. I'm not particularly interested in that, you know, that's why the more committed situation, you know, so that you're developing a more comprehensive way of being with the whole thing. You have a bigger context, you know why you're doing it, and it really is about moving people. I mean, I find that people at the end of the individuation process, and especially if they've done tons of spiritual work, get very narcissistic. You know, it gets to be all about me and my personal narrative and my process, and, you know, God bless us. You know, we sort of get to the end of that, and then we even get sick of ourselves. So it's about moving beyond that and actually, you know, taking all of that energy and that work and moving it towards, you know, towards a higher order of human relating and hopefully a higher order of being useful in the world. I don't know if that answers this question, but...
Yeah, that's great. Let's take a live question from someone calling from a phone number that's identified as being from Burlington, Vermont. I don't know your name. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sarah Grace.
Hi, Sarah.
This is Sarah Grace, and I'm really glad to be on this call. I come on a lot of your calls, and I always learn so much. And you know, this just seems like such an important subject and such an important thing to really put out in the world. I mean, I'm very excited about it. Not that I really completely understand, you know, how you do it by this call, but you know, I really feel that you know, together, you know, I mean, I say erase me, because I want to be, you know, I want to be erased. I'm much more interested in, you know, in creating relationships that are, you know, kind of open and I mean, I'm a group kind of a person and a community kind of a person, and I just love the idea of sort of opening, you know, just opening up and not living, you know, so concentrated and focused on myself and my temperature and, you know, whatever's going on with me. I think it's a really, really... you know, I have to say, I thought it was, you know, when you two were doing your exercise together, I mean, so many different things were coming up for me that were obviously about me and not about the two of you. So that was very interesting. I would like to know more about your relationship with Peter. I mean, it just sounds like a fantastical, you know, relationship. I was wondering if you had written anything about it.
Yeah, actually, one of the great ways for anybody to find out more about this is you just go to mutual-awakening.com, and you can download a free 77-page ebook, and the first chapter is all about me and Peter, and then the what this paradigm is in the context, and it's got color pictures in it, so. You can do that. The other thing just to say, too, Terry, is that, to let people know that on there's a free call on November 3rd that I think you're going to have in your email too, that people can get on and they can also have a little deeper experience of what this is. Because all of what we're talking about, I mean, you and I are living in this world, Terry, but it's nascent. I mean, it's barely existent as far as understanding and opportunity. So, yeah, does that help? Is she still there?
I'm sorry, Brad already muted her, so we're
okay. That's
gone.
Fine.
Yeah. there are a variety of there's a lot of questions here. There are some people that are really wanting to challenge us to go forward into what we do once we've awakened together. Like, where do we go once we've awakened together? What then? And there are others that are talking about, you know, the things I brought up, like the structures of privilege and the, you know, the historical context of things like, you know, Gandhi's freedom struggles and indigenous peoples' struggles. And yeah, I think to some people we seem like we're kind of talking about something for rich white people, you know, that rubbing some listeners wrong. I wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's anything you want to say.
I think there's different, you know, there's different things that move life forward, and not everything applies. You know, giving somebody food is important, but also pushing certain possibilities, like in medicine, you know, if you're sort of geeking around and trying to discover, you know, the answer to some disease, you know, it can look like you're not doing anything for a really long time. So I think you have to have discernment that different things create different possibilities. And at the moment, I don't think that on the planet we have created as human beings a kind of consciousness in groups, you know, in collectives that really is awake and has a certain kind of capacity to mobilize itself and work. You know, I mean, even sports teams, you know, I mean, they try to do that. And when they do that, you know, somewhat effectively, and there's not tons of ego going on, they're amazing. You know, they actually work together in a particular way. So I think that consciousness is not awake yet. And we don't know what the applications will be, but we have to find out how to wake it up first. And then we can figure out what to do with it. That's how I see it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let me offer one more question that was typed in before we go to another live question. Salvi in Belchertown writes, I know exactly what you described as far as that deeper letting go, and it doesn't have to do directly with what may be described as awakening. It's more a question of some sort of deep faith, which makes it possible to do that kind of letting go. Just like individual saints have lived somewhat separate lives and not been directly involved with trying to solve the world's problems, such a group or groups of collective awakeners, I feel, would need to live somewhat separately from the greater world. Does this line up with your perceptions, Patricia, or do you see it?
Not mine. I mean, I don't. That could definitely also be very helpful. I don't know. For me, having lived in some, you know, I lived in an ashram when I was with Peter for, you know, at least a few months. And I think even working for Landmark, we were sort of a little bit in a separate world, even though we were still in the world. So I've sort of experienced, you know, the value and the beauty of being slightly isolated. What I wanted in the design of this is I wanted to design something that was a way that it could be intense, but that you could have people that had big lives, you know, big complicated lives with kids and, you know, all kinds of things that were right in the smack in the middle of the world, but that it was also intense enough that something could really happen. And So my commitment is sort of this we cloud. You know, it's like we're living in a certain kind of connectedness 24/7 and building the frequency of that so that we can be in our lives and yet in a way also be the Sangha, you know, that's separate simultaneously so that we're deepening. So that's the experiment that I'm you know, working on.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to fit in a bunch. We got a bunch of good written-in questions, so I guess I want to try to do some a little bit more rapid fire. We
sure.
We have a question here from Paloma in Oakland. Hi, Paloma.
Hello. Hello. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Hi.
Please Thank ask
you.
Your question.
Hello.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. My question is in the zone of what we can do to enact, embody, and link with others around this collective impact. I myself have been recently inspired about water, and we have communities. We have 1 million people in California who lack potable water. And I'm wondering if there's a way in which some of our groups might kind of apply ourselves to a particular sort of place where we can actually help move the dial, especially right now with the drought. And I'm just wondering, is this something that I keep thinking there's a way, someone asked a question about the internal and the external, and I'm thinking if we stepped sort of into something outside of our own skins, this might inspire more innovation and creativity among us. I'm noticing it's bringing forth things in me and in others that I'm working with, and I just would like to throw that out as a possibility. And I want to thank Patricia and Terry for creating this space today. I'm thrilled to be a part of it. As
thank you, Paloma. There's something funny with your sound, so I'm gonna mute you. But thank you so much for that question. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, I think there's different ways to work, you know, where you can bring people, you can work on the inner space of the people by taking on something in the outer world, and then there's a way to work on the inner space more directly, and I believe in both. My particular work at the moment is to sort of really focus on the sort of the deepest sort of mystical union that's possible and to see from there, you know, with the type of people that are in the group, you know, what kind of iterations they create out in the world. Since it's still right at the beginning, that's the only piece I can take on at the moment. But I do think that people that are brilliant at, you know, how do you create a team to do something, sometimes taking on the world can also, you know, taking on a project can also bring people together in a certain way.
Okay, good. There are a number of very interesting questions that have just come in. JD in Fairhope says, whatever happened to Werner, and have we evolved into the promise that his and Ole Larson's seminars made, that a tipping point would be reached with the exponential power of consciousness? Is that something you're familiar with? Does this relate to that?
Yeah, I don't remember what Ole was doing. I knew him way back when. But I know that the landmark work has reached millions of people. And, you know, all the coaching schools and all of the work that's arisen around that really came from the work that we were doing way back when. So I'm clear, you know, that whatever it was that we were doing has impacted the culture in a big way. You know, it's through things that people don't even realize. But, you know, I guess we haven't reached the tipping point of consciousness yet. You know, we're still working on that. Yeah.
You know, James from South Lake Tahoe asks an interesting question. He says, it seems to me that this intersubjective we space almost has to be done from the get-go in developing new relationships, as old friends, relatives, family all carry a history, and people really don't really like to see changes and the risks of those relationships changing or falling apart or
mm-hmm.
ending.
Right.
How do you see that?
I think the people that enter into this sort of more intensive level of commitment, you have to let go, even if the people aren't in the room, you know, that you're connected to, as you begin to let go of your more egoic object relations, you know, seeing the other as something and you're something, and what glues you together is a particular kind of stability, that starts to come apart in your consciousness. And, you know, you have to start to trust that the relatedness is going to be orchestrated in a way that's really, you know, from a different place. So, yeah, it kind of ruins those things. You know, the real relationships that you have come more alive, and the ones that are actually not really real, you know, tend to come apart. So, you know, there's a warning label for this kind of thing.
Right.
If you want enormous stability, you should definitely not do this. Right?
Yeah.
Definitely not.
There are some really interesting questions coming in. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to get to all of them, because there are quite a few rich ones. Catherine in Vancouver offers a challenge that's kind of worth bringing forward. She says, if, as you say, being in survival mode precludes mutual awakening, how do you reconcile this way of seeing things with the 9/11 contextualized experience that you've also described?
Oh, yeah, it's true. Well, that was big enough to pop everybody out. You know, something popped open. I don't know, maybe. You know, I mean, that's a really good point. You know, maybe there's a way to work in a disaster area that would awaken that consciousness for everyone. I don't know. I don't know how that would work. That would probably be one of the people that is in the Evolutionary Collective who's more attuned to, you know, those kinds of situations might be able to discover how to really make that happen. And that's kind of what I'm saying is, you know, I'm not the translator. You know, I mean, all the various translations into government, into sports, into families, et cetera, or religion, I think will come from the people that are in the concentrated situation. They'll make the translations. That's not really something that I have the capacity to do.
Mm. Mary Linda, who I know is a very serious practitioner who has contemplated the state of the world, you know, very deeply, she types in, tomorrow is the International Day of Peace. Yet mm-hmm. this entire weekend, my heart feels even more expanded as I can deeply feel this collective vibration where a powerful frequency hovers over our planet, maybe even going beyond into the cosmos. I've meditated most of the weekend, spent much time in nature. There is something bigger and greater than my simple words here can communicate. Can you both talk about this and how it relates to this we consciousness growing and becoming? Thank you.
Do you want to answer that?
Well, you know, I think that the subtle fields are real, and yet that they're so complex, and there's so many different things going on. So I'm in touch with people who are having such different experiences from one another, that generalizing about exactly what's happening on the planet as a whole is hard. Sometimes I would say we're in a stress epidemic. There's just so much stress going on that people are almost getting rattled apart. Sometimes I would talk about how profoundly people are turning to practice and to spirituality, because I see that around me everywhere I go. And I feel like there is a greater game going on. I think that there's a way that wholeness and health are responding to this fragmentation and stress,
mm-hmm.
and that we're expressions of how wholeness and health are reasserting themselves, and that's the core of what my work is about. And I think that that's really the essence of the whole integral movement, really. You want to add anything, Patricia?
Yeah, just I was with David Nickel yesterday, who wrote a great book called Subtle Activism, and there was a worldwide meditation that Thomas Huber led, and it was beautiful. And David, who is a new friend, you know, is working on the you know, like on the inner planes of, you know, the Maharishi effect of, you know, that our focused consciousness does actually uplift and statistically change certain things and situations. And so for me, you know, I do think, you know, and they've done tests where, like, if, you know, let's say, Terry, if you and I were, like, in a love relationship for 20 years and they tested our ability to sort of send some kind of, you know, psychic communication to each other, it's, like, 10 times stronger than if we didn't know each other. You know, our focused attention actually has more power. So I'm hopeful that having these larger collectives that are intensely connected, you know, like the multiple beloveds, you know, we are really, really inside a certain consciousness together, and it's 24/7 and it builds, and, you know, we get that focused concentration that we can then, one of the things I'm looking forward to doing with David is, you know, seeing maybe some ways we could experiment with focusing, you know, the collective's consciousness on practical issues and seeing if we can make any impact. So, you know, that's kind of where I am with that experiment, you know, the part that I feel like, you know, that I'm possibly able to contribute to.
Rachel in Woodacre has what's probably our last question. She had a huge individual awakening 27 years ago that's sustained and have had many mutual state changes. About 15 years ago, she uncovered some deep psychic challenges, including attachment issues. She notices that for her opening to stabilize with other people, a certain amount of so-called green, you know, warm connection is needed. And she wants to speak to that. Like, how does this go beyond the postmodern feel-good kumbaya, but how does it also incorporate it? How do you view that, that, you know, the ways that we make ourselves feel loved and safe enough to go that deep?
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, as you said, there once a year, there's an opening for people to enter into the ongoing container of the collective. And this fall, right, there are those 3 days that you mentioned. And in those three-day intensive orientations, part of what happens is that we have 3 days to actually cover and take people to, like, what are the particular vectors? What are the directions of what has to be present in order for this level of sacred connection and communion? You know, where are we doing this? And what is needed for that? And obviously, you know, we look at both the, you know, the postmodern and beyond, you know, sort of second and third tier for people that are familiar with integral. You know, this needs to be done in a particular place, a certain location in consciousness, with, you know, with people that are in the right place to do it. You know, trust has to be present. A certain kind, you know, level of consciousness needs to be present to do it from a place that engenders the level of relaxation and, you know, psychological safety too. You know, because, you know, you can get together with three people and it can just be awful and crazy. Having taught, you know, for years, you know, I know probably better than anybody how difficult, you know, groups of people can be. So this is done not perfectly, but it's done with as much care and concern to what are the elements that need to be present and how to attune to those things so that we have the greatest chance of being able to do this and do this very deeply.
Well, it looks like we're out of time. thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Patricia. And if you value what you're receiving here, please support our work by letting others know about it. They can register for this series at beyondawakeningseries.com. Thank you, Patricia, and thank you for joining me and Patricia today.
Thank you, Terry.
So goodbye, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.